What's going on, man?
I'm just chilling in the Royal Victoria Hotel.
Oh, tell me more, tell me more. What's
It's not very royal.
what's so Taylor Hamill, DMM professional, welcome. Thank you. I know you're overseas right now. Could you get into that a little bit? What do you have going on?
Yeah, well, I'm here for the month. I'm in Wales. I'm in Llanberis. I'm not saying that correctly, but I'm in the where DMM is located in Wales, and I'm here to. I did some training last week. We're doing some training again this week, and meetings and product design, all that stuff.
So Taylor, I think you're in a really cool position, and I know that you started as a as an arborist, as a contract climber, but can you go into a little bit of how you were introduced into the industry, and then sort of talk about the evolution of yourself and how you got involved with DMM, because I think it's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, you bet. Let's see, I was living in New York City and I came home back to Minneapolis, well, St. Paul, where I'm from, St. Paul, Minnesota. This is in 2001, and I needed something to do. I didn't have any job prospects, didn't really know what I wanted to do. I had been a plumber. I did a bunch of different things before I became an arborist, but
Right.
I worked in various places and all that. But yeah, so I came home, needed something to do. My uncle is a tree climber. He was a contract climber at the time and was working for a company. So my brother and I both started working on the ground, dragging brush and running ropes for my uncle.
Right.
And that was my introduction into the tree world back in, well, that was 2000, winter, well, that was, yeah, winter of 2001, 2002, that time. And,
So
go ahead.
now do you now are you guys still close? I mean, is your uncle still doing that, or 'cause that's
Yep, my uncle still climbs.
that's awesome.
We chat once in a while. Basically, when
I'm sure he's proud of you.
yeah, you never know. But yeah, we get along. Working with him for a little while. My brother then went off and was working at a music school. I stayed on with my uncle at the time, and we started a business together. So
Oh,
we
cool.
it's just basically the two of us. We bought a truck and a chipper
Right.
and did that for a couple of years. And then we wanted to go our separate ways, do different things.
Right.
So with that business and through my t that time with my uncle, we had made several connections with other companies and for contract climbing. So I basically just built on that
Right. Right.
that base for my own clientele, and just sort of built my own business then, contract climbing out of that.
How so you kind of focus on you kind of come from a from the background of being a climber, and it's not really it's hard to maintain a longevity. It's such a especially if you're not if you're not operating out of a bucket truck, and you're climbing 4 or 5 days a week. So do you think that do you think that had an effect on how you sort of thought about your future and where you were going in the industry? Or was it was were there other motivations?
Well, I guess
Was there a point where you couldn't, where you just got physically beat down and thought maybe I should think about other pipelines of opportunity, or, you know, did you always sort of have a vision to get into like product development or, you know, stuff like that?
Yeah, no, I never really thought that far in advance.
Right.
It was fun and exciting, and, you know, I loved climbing for sure.
Right.
But yes, I mean, I reached a point, where I was having trouble physically.
Right.
I have a degenerative disc disease in my back. So that was a big thing for me. Initially, we all start out doing it the hard way, and
right.
I also started out doing it the hard way. Quickly figured out that I needed to do something to change that, and did that, and spent most of my, I was a climber for 15 plus years,
right.
Most of that contract climbing, but I very quickly realized that I wasn't going to be able to last very long if I did things the hard way. So that was I've always been sort of a techie kind of person,
right.
Interested in gear and different techniques and things, whether it was, you know, plumbing or, you know, skateboarding or who knows what, but it's very difficult when you are doing a job that you really, really love to do and your body isn't keeping up anymore. And
absolutely.
I think, we can all as tree climbers, we can all attest to that, where, at a certain point, no matter how ergonomic, to use that word, whatever techniques you use, the fact of the matter is that we are climbing trees and gripping things and lifting heavy things and twisting our body in ways. You know, it's like a dancer. I don't want to compare us to dancing, but I mean,
dancers can get on board with that totally.
They have the same issue. You know, they can be physically fit and super healthy and strong, but at a certain point you just can't do that anymore.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. That's interesting. I think a lot of people, recognize you from, you know, the YouTube videos, especially, I can remember watching the Hitch Climber videos like thousands of times, and just, I think a lot of people, and especially now newer climbers, they're getting a lot of information online. And, I know the ISA and there's also other guidebooks out there, that are excellent resources, but I feel as though so many new climbers are just going to the internet and they're searching YouTube. And so, can you talk about that Hitch Climber series? Was that a project that you did early on for DMM, or did you just put that out there on your own?
Well, yeah. You talk about the Hitch Climber series. Well, there's really only the teaser video and then part one. We never actually finished part two or part three.
Well, dude, there. Yeah, that's. You know what, though, man? It's really like, I think that says a lot to how fast things progress anymore. It's just so crazy that it's like, I mean, the Hitch Climber pulley itself, and I don't mean to cut you off, but the Hitch Climber pulley itself became like the new foundation for every Hitch Climber, you know, system. And then I know some other pulleys came out, like the Pinto, and I think ISC had one out with the fixed plates for the wrench. Well, such a great product. And so talk about that a little bit, you know, about how it played out between you and DMM, or if that's something that you did just do on your own.
Sure. Well, that initially, when I started doing those videos, I was working for both Teufelberger and DMM at the same time.
Okay.
And also was, um, what's the word I'm looking for here, associated with the Tree Imagineers.
Right.
That's really how I got my introduction into this thing, was sort of building a relationship with Tree Imagineers. And through that, there was an opportunity to, do some things for these companies. And
right.
I thought, well, why don't I make some videos? And there had been some arborists making videos at that time, certainly before I did. I just felt like I could contribute something there. And the companies at that time, Teufelberger and DMM, were sort of looking for a sort of rough around the edges type of feel, like here's just a working dude.
You know,
they didn't want to do this corporate thing. So it worked out, and it was a lot of fun at first, but it soon became a battle to keep the videos going, keep the content, not necessarily content, but keep the videos going. And I was just doing it all myself. I'd just strap a camera to a limb and hit record and hope I was in the frame, so it, and that worked out for a little while, but we needed to come up with a different plan. And this is sort of, it just sort of fizzled out, I guess.
We
decided to focus our time on other things. And now, for example, so I don't work with Teufelberger anymore, but I'm now, the North American rep, basic DMM, and I do other things as well. I'm in Europe here doing a few workshops.
Right.
We're shooting videos in house at DMM now with an in house film crew in that, and they've got expensive cameras and quality editing hardware, and they're not just shooting with a GoPro,
right,
I was doing.
Right.
So that's sort of how it's evolved.
I gotta be honest, that was like a little personal satisfactory question that I had to ask, because I had always wondered about that. And it's just cool because I know for myself, as I was learning to climb and learning about the industry, that was such a popular video, and I would just watch it, man, all the time, and just be like, wow, this is so cool. Who is this guy? I wonder what this guy's deal is. And now here you are sitting in my living room with me. Unreal.
Oh yeah, man.
Hey,
yeah,
I gotta say, man, the DMM rigging challenge at Jambo, what a cool game changer. Unreal. I just love that whole team feel, and to be able to go in and analyze a situation and then put together your equipment and try to solve a task with other arborists. It was really so well done. You really did such a great job. And just the way you talk about rigging and loads and how those things act on the tree, it was such a learning experience. And I imagine that your training seminars are very similar in that sense. So hats off to that, man. That was really, I really had to throw that out there. It was so well done. But I guess talk about that a little bit. Was that the first time that you had ever done a project like that? The rigging challenge.
First of all, Well, thanks a lot for the input and the feedback. That's great. It's I had a lot of fun doing it. I mean, it was a little bit. They can tend to be helter skelter,
right.
When you don't know what the trees are and that. But actually, Nick at Tree Stuff, did a good job in communicating with me ahead of time. So that's great. And I just sort of had an idea. Practically speaking, when we're rigging trees and dismantling or moving things around and that, it's a very hands-on sort of feel approach. You know, we sort of learn as we go as arborists and that. And although it's important to just be able to judge things and size of pieces and, you know, limbs and this and that, and go for it. And I think we do get away with that.
Totally.
I think it's important to recognize and really learn about and think about the physics, and the forces that we're putting in the tree. Even if it's just a sort of some general guidelines for yourself, I don't expect, you know, I never went up in the tree with a calculator and inclinometer or that, but actually in some cases that may very well be appropriate, you know, for a high risk, project. But yeah, so I try to basically build my, seminars, I get, or workshops as it were. I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to that type of stuff. So I can get a little bit long winded about, you know, force and friction and vectors, and I'm sort of constantly refining my approach and trying to make it, you know, exciting for everybody. But you know, if it were me, I'd spend, you know, 2 full days on just the physics and then go out for another 2 days and actually start rigging some trees down or something, you know. But
that doesn't always work.
So
I think
I felt that rigging challenge was a good example of, you know, getting people to think critically about what exactly they were doing, not just, oh, well, there, that anchor point looks good, let's just stick a block on there and go for it.
Well, I think that you know, earlier you had sort of said that helter skelter feel, and I feel as though when we are under contract working for whoever it may be, a homeowner or, you know, property owner, what have you, I think there is a certain sense of anxiety that you're definitely working within a strict time limit. And you know, there's money on the line. So you want to be efficient and you want to be fast, but you also want to be safe. And I thought that to have a rigging challenge like that in a competition kind of creates that. And listen, I'm not trying to say that, you know, everyone's out there every day with their back against the wall, you know, trying to get, but I guess everyone can relate to having to get things done, you know? And I think that really created a good environment to learning, you know, because it translated very well to the everyday operation, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's cool. I'm glad that came across. That was really the point. I didn't want people to walk away from that going, well, I'm never going to do that.
Right.
You know, why should I care about that? I tried to make it relevant to the, you know, maybe that was a special circumstance with, you know, 3 different anchor points or, you know,
right,
whatever.
Right.
But point being, the bigger your mental, to use a cliche, you know, your mental toolbox.
Right.
You know, if you have some gear, you know, you have enough gear in your toolbox and you have enough in your mental toolbox, you don't necessarily use it all the time, but when the rubber meets the road, when it is time to use that, it's important to have it. I think, you know, I can relate it to even just throw line, for example.
Right.
You know, if you never use throw line, then when you really, really do need to use it, you're going to be sort of out of luck, you know. So it's one of those things where, just like any skill, you know, you need to aerial rescue anything. You need to practice it, keep it up, and understand a few fundamentals about it. You don't have to write a book on it.
Right.
But to understand a few fundamentals will really give you an easier time in configuring systems and setting things up.
You know, I think it's interesting, you know, that how we all learn and how we grow in the industry, and you had mentioned before how you're always trying to fine-tune how your understanding of the science and of the physics and everything like that. And can you talk a little bit about how you keep yourself educated and keep yourself fresh? I mean, obviously, I know you have a pretty high profile in the industry, being that you work with DMM on such a big scale. So I'm sure that they offer resources, but can you talk about how you like to sort of keep yourself in the loop and up to date on everything that you need to know?
Sure. It's on the one hand, it is nice to have resources where you can have a little backing behind you. Oftentimes it is difficult to make things happen if you are struggling to, you know, pay your rent and
right.
this and that to, well, for example, I mean, let me take a step back. Like when I, just buying a load cell or something like that
to
start measuring things. And, you know, I did really well in math in high school, but once I graduated high school, I never wanted to think about it ever again.
Right.
And it's really difficult now to, it is very difficult now to sort of relearn things that maybe you once knew.
Right.
Or maybe you fell asleep in class, you didn't know about it. But the thing too is you don't have to go through a college level trigonometry course to figure this stuff out. You know, there's plenty of resources out there to do it. But I remember back, I mean, we were teaching some climbing workshop. This is maybe back in 2008 or I don't know what. And, you know, we were teaching some workshop somewhere. And, you know, I had figured out about redirects, you know, and force on redirects and things like that, but I didn't understand it thoroughly enough to really be teaching a workshop about it. And but you just go for it anyway.
Right.
And
right.
So no, here we are teaching this workshop, and we were talking about, you know, the force at the anchor point on, let's say, a 90 degree redirect, you know. And threw out the number and somebody came up to me, sort of pulled me aside and said, "Hey, Taylor, you said that number, but what does that number mean?" He said that, you know, there's a vector there, you know, that force is acting in a certain direction. And I went, "Huh?" I thought, "What the hell is a vector?" And here I was teaching a workshop. So that was a big, big eye opener for me. And that really sort of launched me down the road to trying to understand this stuff more thoroughly. And even now, there are things that pop up that,
right.
you know, you need a little more work on, or I need a little more work on here and there. You'll never figure it all out.
Right.
But I don't know. I think that was a big eye opener for me. I thought, ooh, well, yeah, I guess I should have known what a vector was if I'm teaching a class on. You know, redirects. So so now, yeah, it's basically just being involved in the industry, networking with other accomplished arborists and trainers, and trying to do a little bit of reading here and there. But you know, I'm learning something new all the time and constantly trying to refine things. How do I keep up to date? Just through those things, talking to people
right.
that I respect and that know, you know, what's going on, and maybe we have a discussion and we figure out that we're both wrong.
Right.
And then that sort of lights the fire under us to go, well, maybe I really don't understand this the way I should. And, you know, there you go. But there's many, many resources out there for people to learn about, you know, basic rigging physics and things. Yeah,
a lot of good, a lot of great books. You know, I had my, got tested for my certified arborist qualification through the ISA, and at the time, you know, I was reading their study guide, but I was also reading things like Jerry Baranek's Fundamentals of General Tree Work. You know, I'm looking at these books on my shelf right now. Jeff Jepson's book, I used to climb with Jeff Jepson's book. I climbed with it. You know, I would literally, like, it was just so cool to have that resource, because it was like, I mean, he was literally answering questions as I was going up the tree, and it was, and I don't think it was a thing where it wasn't like I didn't know what type of situation I was putting myself in. It was just almost like another added level of safety, so to speak, because it was such a new thing, and although I was confident in doing it, I wanted to I guess give myself an out in case some, you know, oh wow, why can I not tie this anchor hitch, or why isn't this prusik holding, and then, you know, so it's really fascinating, and not only that, but I think the community as a whole, there's so many people that come from different industries and from different backgrounds, and that sort of has always fascinated me, because, you know, people have such a different understanding of the physical world, and I think that, you know, all those different backgrounds come together, and it really does create such a wonderful learning experience and an atmosphere to learn in. So yeah, it really is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that you know, I don't want to sound shady, but I see you talking quite a bit on Facebook about heavy metal, and I feel like there's this totally, like, side of you that I don't know. I think you were, like, looking for a mosh pit in New York City one time. You know, can you tell us a little something about the Taylor Hamill we may not know?
Sure. Yeah, man, I mean, it might just be my midlife crisis. No, it's, I play the drums.
Okay.
And, my history in music, I started playing guitar when I was 12 and played guitar until I was about 16 and decided I was tired of that, wanted to play drums. And, you know, I played like blues guitar basically.
Right.
That was fun. 16 years old, I thought, oh, I want to try something different. So I started playing the drums, played drums for about 5 years then, you know, until I was about 20, 21, and then stopped. I wanted to go to college for music, and I wanted to be a musician as a career, you know, but life sort of catches up with you. You have to start paying bills, and
yeah,
I just
dude.
Wasn't, you know, I was getting a little disenchanted with the whole thing. So, then I just, yeah, started doing other stuff, went to work, became a plumber, all that. Well, about, yeah, maybe 3 years ago now, once I quit playing drums, I'd always wanted to play drums. When I wasn't playing them for all those 16 years or whatever it was, I was constantly thinking about it, but I was just so busy just trying to make ends meet and doing other stuff, never came around. So, yeah, finally, 3 years ago now, I said, "Hey, forget it. I'm buying a new drum kit. I'm renting a studio, and I'm playing drums."
That's awesome, dude.
So yeah, started up again, and man, metal. Yeah, I'd always played jazz. As when I was a drummer early on, it was always jazz and sort of fusion. I was in a rock band, but it wasn't. You know, it wasn't like, you know, it was, I would just call it rock, you know, it was cool.
Right,
but
right.
The, yeah, metal, I always disliked metal when I was younger, and it's only since I've been getting older that metal has made an impression on me, and there's, I won't call myself a metal drummer. It's hard to learn when you're almost 40 to change your style in that. But I love progressive music, progressive rock. Metal is out of control, man. I love it. And I never went into mosh pits either when I was younger because, well, A, I wasn't going to metal shows. But actually, the first proper show I ever saw was Rage Against the Machine. I was 16 years old. I saw Rage at First Avenue in Minneapolis. That's and I awesome. Thought, wow, this is out of control. I never want to go in a mosh pit, you know. But now
here you are looking for them, dude.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, and I get hurt every time, but it's all right because you can't. That's what happens. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe now because I'm not climbing trees full time either. I feel like I need to have bumps and bruises and
there you go.
And injuries. You know, so.
It keeps you fresh. It keeps you fresh. Yeah.
There's something too about being when you're checking out a band or when you're at a show of a band that you really really enjoy their music and to have it there and you can feel the compression from the speakers and the rumbling and the vibration and then to be involved in this community as it were of other like-minded people that just want to run around and bash into people.
Yeah, dude.
There's nothing malicious about it. I mean, once in a while you get that person that's just so right. ridiculous
no.
trying to hurt people, but that'll take care of itself. But to be in there and moving around and feel, it's like this physical manifestation of the music, which is very cool.
That's why I do it. I had to ask, man, because I'm like, man, I'm just not getting the full picture of Taylor. You know, I think the first time we kind of officially met was at Jambo, and that's what I saw was this, this nerdy tree guy who's talking about load cells and vectors and all this other stuff, and I'm like, wow, this guy's impressive. Then the next thing I know, you're looking for a pit, and I was like, wow, this guy is really toeing the line here. Hey, listen, yeah. I gotta say, I don't want to keep you any longer, Taylor. I know you're enjoying yourself over there. I thank you so much for getting in touch with me, man. I really do. Appreciate it so much. This was such a great conversation. I really do feel like I have now officially met the most interesting man in the world.
Well, yeah, let's not go that far. But no, man, TC, it's cool. This is a cool idea. I appreciate you reaching out. And anytime, man, we can do a part two sometime, maybe down the road.
Totally. I always wanna invite everyone back. It's sort of like an article in conversation, and I want to keep the conversation going between as many people as I can. I'm fascinated by it. I feel like I learned so much from everyone, and I'm so appreciative of it that I want to share that. I want to share that with the community. So once we hang up, I go on and I just publish it. I don't edit anything. It just goes right up on my blog. And so, like I said, check it out. And I can't thank you enough, Taylor. I'm definitely going to catch up with you soon, man. We'll talk some more, but safe travels. Enjoy yourself. Thank you, DMM, for sponsoring this episode, even though it's sort of like a freelance thing. I'm just happy to share. I'm happy to share, and I thank them too because I know they are as well. So it's just really awesome, man. I really can't tell you how appreciative I am of you and how professional you were about this, man.
Oh, cool. You too, TC. It's you've got a passion for the industry, and it shows, and it's great, man. So looking forward to the next one.
No doubt, Taylor. Be good, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Peace, man.
Bye-bye.